Good morning, everybody. Today is Thursday, November 30th, 2017. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Thursday, everyone. It is a freezing 31 degrees and overcast here in upstate New York. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show AI Voice Transcription, Adobe Voco, Samsung, Baxter, and Baby Robots. We've been looking at AI and robots again for the last few weeks and just kind of outlining how this is all moving forward and the building of a super intelligence is coming to a smart city near you at some point in the future. Well, this morning I ran across a few stories that are going to take us down a little bit different path we haven't touched on in a while, and that is looking at synthetic biology and CRISPR. We read about DARPA working on environment sensing plants last week that allowed them to sense biological, chemical, or different, they were looking for pathogens, they were looking for explosives. It was the bionic spinach was where it started. There was an update. And they are integrating all kinds of genetic modifications to nature to turn them into creatures that they can manipulate. We looked at that cyborg dragonfly that they had inserted some electrodes or fiber optics into its spinal cord, and they were able to turn it right and left. I mean, this is what is going to be happening to us in the future. Don't think that experimenting with nature has nothing to do with us. These are just tipping their tips of their toes to see what is possible with biology, and eventually we're going to be next. It's going to be sold to us as a cure for cancer or a cure for paralysis or a cure for a mental disorder or a cure for something we haven't even thought of yet. And it's going to be done in a hospital, and they will tell you that it's going to fix you and fix you in their vision. Let's read about some of this. DARPA synthetic biology initiatives could militarize the environment. Well, that's what you get when you have bomb-sniffing grass. Is that something that we are comfortable with? This is out of Slate.com, out of their futurography section. Sure, the U.S. military has deployed the power of biology in nature before. For instance, the Navy trains dolphins to detect underwater mines, and the Army Research Office studies life sciences to find new ways to better soldiers' protection and performance. You also have DARPA's BTO, Biotechnology Office. During the Vietnam War, the military also experimented with weather manipulation, wink, something that they're not doing anymore. And in recent years, however, the military, mostly under the umbrella of the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, more affectionately known as DARPA, has created a new suite of programs that takes a very different approach to harnessing the power of nature, and that would be synthetic biology. Among other initiatives, researchers at DARPA are attempting to engineer insects, and we've talked about this before, the Insect Allies program, to deliver protective genes to plants, and that's exactly what it is, as well as to transform bacteria and yeast into factories to produce on-demand chemicals and fuel, and to develop methods to reverse any threats posed by gene drives. And that is something that Bill Gates has invested in, to be able to spread a genetic trait through an entire population in one generation. These programs not only represent new and controversial approaches to leveraging the natural world, but they also have created new weapons of mass destruction. That is my addition. The technologies that emerge will not only be a big deal for innovations that they'll bring, but they'll also be for legal and ethical lines that they may cross. And please, I think if there's anything we've established on the show is that there's a lot of ethical lines that we are crossing right now, and that's why these technologies are so dangerous. Many of these projects are strictly for defense rather than offense. Given the size of the budget, the U.S. military investment makes up a rather a large portion of money in synthetic biology research. It is possible, then, that DARPA's work is bending the entire field of synthetic biology toward military applications. Now, we had read the one time about the DARPA lady talking about in the future being able to push a button and create life that could potentially terraform Mars. I ran across a guy who actually worked on a terraforming Mars project in a an article that I read that I have queued up here for today. Before 2008, the federal government invested basically negligible amounts in synthetic biology. But of course, Obama brought the coming apocalypse upon us with all of his programs and his executive orders. And between 2008 and 2014, it poured approximately $819 million into synthetic biology research. Since 2012, the majority of that funding came not from budgets of civilian organizations like National Science Foundation or the National Institute of Health, but from DARPA and other Defense Department initiatives. DARPA created at least five programs, much of which are now housed under, here we go, Biological Technology Office, more affectionately known as the BTO, that demonstrates the agency's interest in ecological manipulations. At first, DARPA focused on organisms that can create materials, fuels, and other chemical compounds, and they launched their first synthetic biology program called the Living Foundries Program, which we talked about on the show in 2013. It seeks to increase the speed of biological design, build, test, and learn cycle. And in order to create hundreds of new molecules that could be used for manufacturing biological products, ranging from antibiotics to super strong building materials. And in subsequent years, the organization began taking a slightly different path. First, it added biological robustness in complex settings, a program designed to overcome major synthetic biology obstacles. Most synthetically designed organisms don't live or function well outside of a highly controlled environment, let alone in the natural environment. And DARPA also created, and I had a story about this queued up, the Safe Genes Program, which focuses on creating gene drives, a technology that promotes inheritance of specific traits in a species that can be safely introduced or combattled in the environment, to then wipe out the species. For example, researchers are looking into creating gene drives that will make it impossible for mosquitoes to spread certain diseases because they will no longer be able to reproduce. The program aims to study predictable and reversible gene editors and other measures that might counter undesirable outcomes. I know at one point they were talking about making it like a digital rights management for your genome so you can be accidentally or on purpose overwritten. Then there is the Insect Allies Program, which I thought they mentioned that up before, but not by name, which aims to use advanced biotechnologies to engineer insects that can help protect crops from naturally occurring or intentionally designed pathogens. And in late 2016, DARPA issued a call out for academics to submit grant proposals to develop ecological niche preference engineering technologies that would, quote, enable the genetic engineering of an organism's preference for a niche, and that would be their temperature range, their food source, or their habitat, in order to lessen their, quote, economic, health, and resource burdens. And isn't that going to be our future? One of the things that I worry about is they've sequenced genomes and now they are starting to identify locations. I think I saw there's 52 genes now that have been identified as having something to do with superior intelligence. What's going to happen once everybody's sequenced and the AI is now trying to filter out how we're going to support, you know, right now it's 7 billion, but maybe in the future it'll be 14 billion people on this planet, and whether or not you're paying back into the system or if you are what they used to call a useless eater or a resource burden. Imagine an agricultural pest that has a niche or a preference for a particular crop. Maybe the leaves of that plant produce a certain chemical compound that the pest is attracted to, or the flower gives off an appealing scent. You could then engineer the insect to change its niche preference for the particular trait, change the crop to prevent that niche from being produced, or you could reproduce the impact that insect has because it will have lost its niche. So why is DARPA doing all this? Well, very good question. DARPA clearly states that the existing initiatives focus on countering biological threats, be it from nation states or, one of my favorite terms, rogue actors, or possibly by mistake, accidentally or on purpose, from other scientific researchers. And I don't doubt that they will serve this need. However, the optics of these programs are problematic on a number of fronts. Yeah, so people like me look at them and go, huh? Particularly because of who is funding them. If we agree that agriculture is under threat from biological attacks, either occurring naturally or intentionally designed and released to cause harm, as the Insect Allies program states, then why not have the Agriculture Department lead this program? And if the government is concerned about threats posed by gene drives, then why isn't the National Science Foundation or the Environmental Protection Agency funding the Safe Genes research? Well, because the U.S. is funding these initiatives through the Department of Defense rather than a civilian organization, it is not hard to see how someone in an international community might perceive these as potential bioweapons programs, ding, rather than investments in purely defensive technologies. Remember we talked about that document that Nixon signed? I never remember the name of it, Nuremberg maybe, or something, about biological warfare and nuclear weapons. And it was ratified in 1972, I believe. It was originally written in the 60s. And when Nixon inked it, he had made a statement that we were going to continue our research on an offensive perspective into biological organisms for vaccines, but we were not going to be creating any potential bioweapons. Well, you know, when you have research for vaccines, you're going to need the pathogen. And when you start researching the pathogen, you can do whatever you want down long, dark hallways with no windows outside of the public eye. After all, if the U.S. is able to engineer an insect to carry a virus for protective purposes, it wouldn't be hard to engineer that very same insect to carry a deadly virus for offensive ones. And how many times did I talk about those stink bugs? That I really thought that the stink bugs and the stink bug invasion up the northeast of the United States that came off of a few shipping crates out of China was really very scary to me, because I thought to myself, wow, when I first started looking into some of this genetic modification they were doing insects, what would it take for China to do something like that? And then someone nefarious, accidentally or on purpose, put them into a couple packages and they reproduced on the trip and then showed up at our shores, you know, putting out some sort of deadly stinky spray like those things do. And you can't kill them either. There's actually a big problem with stink bugs right now all around here, and they nest and they come out. The second it gets warm, you'll start seeing them come out in the house because they've been up under the eaves. Pretty crazy. Anyway, so possible dual uses, and this is the double-edged sword of these technologies, has a potential to trigger international treaties. While the Biological Weapons Convention, that's it, and the Chemical Weapons Convention do have some bearing on biotechnologies, the Environmental Modification Convention may be more relevant, particularly in relation to gene drives. In the 1978 agreement, it prohibits the hostile use of environmental modification techniques with widespread, enduring, and otherwise severe effects. Think of changes in weather patterns, ocean currents, or ecological balances. Wink. It followed a U.S. call to ban the use of environmental or geophysical manipulation as a weapon of war, which I find pretty amusing, if that's the case, if we headlined that, which notably the American military has done before when it used the insecticide DDT to prevent the spread of illnesses during World War II, and when it used Agent Orange, which was also an early DARPA creation, and attempted to control weather during Vietnam. Despite its age, the agreement's aims and definitions seem to capture the manipulations inherent of many of DARPA's modern synthetic biology programs, particularly Safe Genes and the ecological niche preference engineering programs. This agreement does allow for peaceful uses of environmental modification techniques. Well, that's pretty funny. However, provisions in the treaty allow a party to pause activity of another country in order to clarify the nature of activities suspected to be in violation of the convention. Yeah, I bet when someone calls someone out on that, they're not going to do that in public at the UN. While the parties at the convention have not met since 1992, the provisions of the treaty could provide ammunition for another country to slow down or halt suspect initiatives, especially since the U.S. is a party to the agreement, but not to some of the other relevant international treaties, such as the Convention on Biological Diversity, which is currently negotiating international governance strategies around synthetic biology. And while these DARPA initiatives state that they never intended to create an offensive weapon, which I believe is true, the program may still have the effect of militarizing the synthetic biology field. And since the largest proportion of funding for advanced biotechnologies, such as gene drives, appears to come from American defense agencies and investors such as Bill and Melinda Gates, researchers who depend on grants for the research may reorient their projects to fit the narrow aims of these military agencies. Take, for instance, DARPA's Safe Gene Program, while some private organizations, such as, hey, the Gates Foundation, funded Target Malaria Project, also back work related to the safe and effective use of gene drives, because I read that one on the show. And there currently aren't any other federal research programs with a similar focus, given the limited options. Remember, gene drives utilize CRISPR. Research groups or conservation organizations might choose to take funding from DARPA since it offers one of the only avenues to advance this kind of environmentally focused synthetic biology work, even if they don't have a say in how the defense organization chooses to use it. And really, that's the problem. You know, they are funding all kinds of different organizations, whether they be private or academia, to come up with all kinds of crazy solutions to problems that they pose that are almost impossible, but really put things on a leading edge without necessarily looking at the future implications of somebody who might not have our best interests at heart getting control of these technologies, i.e. look at the nuclear weapons. So while DARPA programs have resulted in non-defense related applications, think of the GPS or the internet or Siri on your Apple. These were second to the primary goal. And what if we flip the primary goal to enable the National Science Foundation or the Department of Agriculture to invest the same amount of money in these technologies as DARPA? Well, society is yet to engage public dialogue about how we want or don't want the use of this emerging suite of biotechnologies, be it for conservation, societal benefit, or for military purposes. And we did not get a vote on this. Like I said, this is all coming whether we want it or not. I don't really see how this train is going to stop. And like Sam Harris said, it's got to be an asteroid or a nuclear weapon to stop the march of technology forward. Nor have we discussed the ethical, philosophical, or environmental implications of permanently altering the genome, engineering a new species, or attempting to redesign an ecosystem like on Mars. With the advent of these military programs, have those decisions already been made for us? I think so. Keep in mind, too, that the aforementioned programs are just the publicly available ones. It is safe to assume that DARPA has a host of synthetic biology research that is currently classified down long, deep, dark hallways. With hundreds of millions of dollars of investment in critical aspects of the natural environment under investigation, it is a conversation that we need to have now. And I would second that opinion. But when you look at a story that we covered back in 2015, Broad Institute, this is Harvard and MIT working together, and Fang Zhang, one of the CRISPR guys, and Georgie Porgy Church's lab have a lot to do with this. DARPA awarded in September of 2015 $32 million to MIT's and Harvard's Broad Institute Foundry to bolster DNA design and manufacturing. A facility at the Broad Institute of MIT and Harvard aims to achieve the full potential of engineering biology, has just received a 5-year, $32 million contract from the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, more affectionately known as DARPA. So this is going to be going from 2015 to 2020. A facility at the Broad Institute of MIT and Harvard aims to achieve the full potential of engineering biology. The foundry, started by MIT Biological Engineering Professor Christopher Voigt and Broad Technology Lab Director Robert Nickel, is the result of a partnership between the Broad Technology Lab and the Synthetic Biology Center of MIT, of which Voigt is a co-director. The foundry enables the rapid design, testing, and fabrication of large sequences of genetic information so they can be assembled like building blocks, just like Legos, for a myriad of medical, industrial, and agricultural applications. Society relies on many products from the natural world that have an intricate material and chemical structure, from chemicals such as antibiotics to materials like wood. We have been limited in our ability to program living cells before to redesign these products. For example, to program living cells to create materials as intricate as wood or seashells, but with new properties. Rather, products from synthetic biology have been limited to small, simple organic molecules. I want to change the scale of genetic engineering to access anything biology can do. They pioneered the application of manufacturing principles of DNA sequencing. This technology is quickly scaled from deciphering a single human genome to examining thousands of organisms, including everything from soil bacteria to elephants. The foundry is working to realize an analogous revolution in designing and writing DNA, in which instructions for useful biological functions are converted into physical DNA that then can be put into living cells. The effort will be supported by DARPA funding and derived from the agency's Living Foundries 1,000 Molecules program, which seeks to establish facilities that can rapidly engineer cells to make chemicals and materials not found in nature. And if I remember correctly, when I read about that Living Foundries program, they wanted to create a library, just like you do in a programming language. We have different functions, and each different function is a module that you can plug in to give your code different features. They want to be able to do that with life. It's pretty crazy. Life library, plug and play. To create the efficient and innovative pipeline needed to meet its goal, the Foundry collaborates with academic and industry partners. Academic partners include Michael Fishbach, an associate professor at the University of California, San Francisco, who has pioneered methods to find combinations of genes that encode desired functions from vast databases of sequenced information. The Foundry has also made it possible to do something that used to be a figment of my imagination, says Fishbach, because combining these genes into a new design requires specifying a precise sequence of millions of DNA nucleotides specified by ATCNG, and a daunting task for an engineer to do by hand. So the Foundry works with Douglas Densmore, a computer-aided design expert in the Department of Electrical and Computer Engineering at Boston University, and after a design is built, determines whether it works as slow due to time required for DNA to be put into cells and for them to grow. Technology from Northwestern University allows newly built designs to be rapidly prototyped in advance for emulsions that mimic the interior of cells, cutting the time it would take for new DNA to be put into cells that then must grow. The Foundry interacts with industry partners through a consortium that seeks to disseminate advances in the foundational tools to design and build DNA. Remember, they're building themselves a little factory here. 2 years ago, with an infusion of $7 million in seed money from DARPA's Living Foundries program, Boyd and his colleagues laid the groundwork for the Foundry, creating a pipeline for swiftly assembling massive genetic systems involving many genes, and they now have successfully demonstrated viability of this platform, churning out hundreds of megabases of DNA in a fraction of the time it would have taken with conventional techniques. This work has already led to some significant advances. One agricultural challenge is the delivery of nitrogenous fertilizer to cereal crops. Currently, fertilizer is chemically produced using natural gas, consuming 2% of the global energy supply. In the first major paper in Nature Biotechnology, Voigt and research partners described how they had applied the Foundry pipeline to redesign the genetics underlying the bacterial processes that convert the nitrogen in air to ammonia. Since then, the Foundry has partnered with global leaders in nitrogen research to provide megabases of DNA to facilitate attempts to find a solution to this problem. So they're going to turn bacteria into little factories, and we have talked about that before as well. Foundry capabilities are also enabling research in other fields, including medicine. Tapping the Foundry's resources, Voigt began research on how bacteria that naturally resides in humans makes compounds that could be potent new drugs for infectious, autoimmune, and neurological diseases. Remember, we had read about that before as well. It was some of that living therapeutics gut bacteria. Well, they'll be able to produce drugs in your gut when they realize that something has gone awry. Prior to this work, researchers could identify the genes that are encoding pathways to new pharmaceuticals, but had no way to make them for use for therapeutics. We want to apply this pipeline to scientific challenges that are too large for an industry or for academia. Voight explains that in the coming decades, this approach will offer critical new products in human health, agriculture, and chemistry, and serve as a mechanism for tackling some of the biggest problems of the world. Yeah, well, that's great. So then I came across this story yesterday. New semi-synthetic organism can make molecules that we have never, ever seen before. Now, you gotta love that one. First time ever, never before seen. Remember, we had a lot of those for a while. We haven't seen these in a while. We've expanded DNA. Now, we discussed this whole thing before. These were these new synthetic proteins, the X and Y proteins. And I told you that was a little tricky. They were playing on us. By calling them X and Y, you don't think twice about them. If they had called them Q and Z proteins, you would have been like, huh? A, T, C, G, Q, and Z. But no, it's X and Y, and we're conditioned to believe X and Y as in male and female, so we don't even think twice about it. But this is not chromosomes. This is DNA. Scientists have expanded the building blocks of DNA to create a stable semi-synthetic organism that can produce biological components entirely new to nature. The DNA that makes up essentially all living things on Earth consists of arrangements of four basic nucleotides, but the new form of life developed by researchers in the U.S. makes use of six, and that is where things get interesting. You remember, too, RT had done a story. We actually, when we were able to play clips way back when, we played it on this show about them saying that they were creating an entirely new alien life form, and that is what this is. Life on Earth has CATG. Those are the four basic proteins, aminos, that make up our DNA strands. Now they're going to have organisms on this planet that have six nucleotides. It's really crazy. These semi-synthetic organisms, or SSO for short, engineered by a team at the Scripps Research Institute in California, is made up of the same four regular nucleobases as you and I, which would be adenine A, cytosine C, guanine G, and thymine T, but it also has two unnatural nucleotides to call upon. This effectively gives it two additional letters, and that would be X and Y, to make up its DNA base pairs and the rungs of the letter that hold the DNA helix spirals together. In 2014, members of the same research team engineered this kind of synthetic DNA base pair and showed that it could be incorporated and modified into a form of E. coli bacteria. If I'm not mistaken, they also were able to get this thing to reproduce at that time. In doing so, they created the first living organism with extra letters in its DNA alphabet, giving it an expanded genetic code that could hypothetically enable new kinds of biological processes. But there was a problem, and that was stability. Yeah, you gotta love these unstable, crazy creations. Seems to be a lot of that going around. And while the semi-synthetic organism could hold onto its unnatural nucleotides, it couldn't maintain them indefinitely during cell division. Oh, I thought they did get it to reproduce. Maybe not. Your genome isn't just stable for a day, says senior researcher Floyd Romsberg earlier this year. Your genome has to be stable for the scale of your lifetime. And if the semi-synthetic organism is really going to be an organism, it has to be able to stably maintain that information. So as a workaround, the team devised a way for the semi-synthetic organism to successfully hold onto its unnatural XY base pair thanks to a new nucleotide transporter that enabled better DNA replication, which was an optimized Y molecule and refined engineering system making use of CRISPR-Cas9. Ding-a-ling-a-ling. Let's get all the bells going off. And this is crazy. So they were able to get it to reproduce, to be able to replicate itself by creating an optimized Y molecule and using CRISPR. The results unveiled in January was the first stable organism formed using an expanded six-letter genetic code. Now, in a new study published today, the team has announced further improvements of this kind of molecular stability with a semi-synthetic bacterium that can transcribe and translate its unnatural X and Y nucleotides with the same efficiency as the natural A, C, T, and G nucleotides. Via a new transcription process, the organism can synthesize proteins containing non-canonical amino acids, and the process could shed new light on ways of replicating molecules with less reliance on hydrogen bonds. Remarkably, this reveals that for every step of information storage and retrieval, hydrogen bonds, so obviously central to the natural base pairs, may at least in part be replaced with complementary packing and hydrophobic forces, the team explains in the paper. Despite their novel mechanism of decoding, the natural codons can be decoded as efficiently as their fully natural counterparts. So let's make it easy for synthetic biology to live. I mean, this is really frightening, guys. This is like the Tower of Babel. And to be quite honest, we don't really know what we are doing or where this is going to lead to in the future. So do we want to continue here? Because then there's a story out of MIT Technology Review on this, because I don't know if you really want to read this. Here's another one that caught my attention. So they are really cranking along on synthetic biology, and they are utilizing these two new nucleotides called X and Y. Now, this takes me to another one, and I found this beyond disturbing, and I want to know what the Chinese are thinking. But X and Y, like I said, that's a little trick that they play on us with these synthetic nucleotides, because these are not X and Y chromosomes like male and female, or female and male, female being X, male being Y. These are proteins that are in a DNA strand. But now let's talk about X and Y chromosomes. CRISPR, and this was November 27, 2017, out of GenomeWeb.com. CRISPR has been used to eliminate targeted chromosomes in new study. Now, they probably should have put which chromosomes in the title, because it would have probably gotten more traffic. If you can only guess, researchers at the Chinese Academy of Sciences and their collaborators have developed a CRISPR-Cas9 system to eliminate targeted chromosomes on the human genome. If you remember back last year, the Chinese were the very first to edit the human germline in embryos utilizing CRISPR. And that was a big deal. That had not been legal in the United States before then, because the germline allows a genetic trait to be passed down through multiple generations, and that was not allowed here until the Chinese did it. And then they said, well, maybe it would be okay if you had a genetic disorder that we could cure. And we're going to look at that as well. But anyway, let's get back to the Chinese. So the Chinese are leading the charge in a lot of this mad science research, and now they have learned to eliminate targeted chromosomes from the human genome. As they reported on Friday, and that would be a week ago, in Genome Biology, researchers developed an approach that used either multiple cleavages induced by one or two single guide RNAs that target multiple chromosome-specific sites, or a combination of 14 sgRNAs, each targeting a specific site to selectively eliminate, and here's the biggie, a sex chromosome in cultured cells, embryos, and in tissues in vivo, and that's in live living creatures. They're eliminating sex chromosomes. What? They were also able to produce a targeted autosome loss in the aneuploid mouse embryonic stem cells with an extra human chromosome, a human-induced pluripotent stem cell with trisomy 21 and cancer cells. So not only are they eliminating sex chromosomes in their experiments in cultured cells and embryos and in live creatures, but they were also targeting in embryonic stem cells that actually had a human chromosome and human stem cells. This is pretty crazy, guys. So we found out the mini brain balls, they're putting human mini brain balls into mice, and now they're putting human chromosomes, sex chromosomes, it sounds like, into mice, and trying to figure out how to delete them with CRISPR. I don't know, this gets pretty technical, but that selectively eliminate a sex chromosome. Why would they do that? Why would they be trying to make an androgynous mouse? I mean, I guess at some point in the future, we've talked about eugenics before. I guess if they decide, just like they're doing with mosquitoes in multiple different ways, they are genetically engineering mosquitoes so that embryos or larvae die before they grow up to reduce the population. But they are also working with a Wolbachia bacteria that infects mosquitoes, making reproduction biological chemical processes incompatible between the males and the females to reduce the population. We first read about some of that Oxitec research that they were doing. Again, there was some sprinkle funding for malaria research from Bill Melinda Gates Foundation with them and Oxford University. That's where Oxitec rolled out of. We found out that there were multiple kinds of population control that they were looking at. One was population reduction, and one was population elimination. Now, if you look at how they keep telling us climate change, oh, we're not going to be able to feed everybody in the deserts and in the savannas if we don't have proper rain and so many disasters and storms, it's all going to be your fault. You're going to have to accept the genetically modified crops that now we've been able to selectively change the type of atmosphere it likes to thrive. That was that story we read before by DARPA. You're going to have to accept it all, and now we're going to have to find a way to permanently reduce at birth, so it's not going to be painful there, Johnny, your sex chromosomes, so you will never have a desire to reproduce. I mean, this is crazy, and that's not what they're saying, but I'm just looking forward future. Where is this going to lead? Why didn't the Chinese learn anything from the one-child policy? There's an entire generation of boys without wives there right now. So, I don't know. Do I want to continue on this for sex chromosomes? Let's get down to the meat and potatoes. The authors concluded that this is the first study that they know of to use CRISPR to eliminate X and autosome chromosomes. And as such, it paves the way for a potential genetic approach to chromosome therapy in vivo. That would be in live organisms. It also offers a new approach to develop animal models with chromosomal deletions, which is a potential therapeutic strategy for human aneuploidy diseases involving additional chromosomes, they added. Oh, and I think that's what that trisomy 21 is that they said they had the mouths infected with. It's where you have too many of one chromosome that causes issues. So now let's fast forward a little bit. This is November 28th, 2017, out of sciencenews.org. Parents may one day be morally obligated to edit their baby's genes. Because remember, there's peer pressure, there's societal pressure. Whether or not you like any of this coming technology, the coming robots, the artificial intelligence, the gene editing, the notebooks in schools and getting rid of textbooks, whether or not you like any of it, it's not going to matter because society is instructing you that this is how things are going to go. These are how organizations, and it was like the, I can't even remember what it was called, Common Core was pushed down through all the schools. It was because of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation pushing their new way as a philanthropic means to help the children. And whether or not you liked Common Core, you had to accept it because it became state standards. As genetic editing becomes a reality, some say it would be wrong not to use it to cure disease. Or what about if all the other kids are doing it? Little Johnny is going to need his brain upgrade to compete. A doctor explains to a young couple that he has screened the pair's in vitro-ly fertilized embryos and selected those that had no major inheritable diseases. The couple had specified that they wanted a son with hazel eyes, dark hair, and fair skin, and the doctor announced that they had also taken the liberty of eliminating the burden of genetic propensities for baldness, nearsightedness, alcoholism, obesity, and domestic violence. The prospective mother replies that she did not want those revisions. I mean, diseases, yes, but... And her husband jumps in to say, "We were just wondering if it was good to leave a few things to chance." Yeah. Designer babies. The doctor reminds the would-be parents why they came to him in the first place. "Don't you question me." And they want to give their child the quote-unquote best possible start. That's like when you start questioning vaccines of your newborn and the doctor looks at you and says, "Oh, you're one of those parents." It's the best possible start. Don't let them get measles or chickenpox, because those were killer diseases in the past. It's just, this is just ridiculous. And it makes me very angry at times to see how we are being forced to do things that we don't necessarily agree with or don't necessarily think are in our best interests or the interests of our family in the future. That is a scene from the movie Gattaca, which I still need to see, which premiered 20 years ago in October, but thanks to recent advances in gene engineering tools such as CRISPR-Cas9, genetic manipulation of human embryos is becoming a reality. Soon, designer babies like those described in the film may even become morally mandatory, some ethicists say. Gattaca's narrator tells us that such genetic manipulation of in vitro fertilized embryos has become the natural way of giving birth in the near future film. It has also created an underclass of people whose parents didn't buy those genetic advantages for their children. I could definitely see that happening. Until recently, that sort of fiddling with human DNA was only science fiction and allegory, a warning against a new kind of eugenics, ding ding, that could pit the genetic haves against the have-nots. And at a symposium sponsored by the Hastings Center on October 26, 2017, before the World Conference of Science Journalists in San Francisco, ethicists and journalists explored the flip side of the discussion, whether parents have a moral obligation to make better babies through genetic engineering. Technology that can precisely change a baby's genes is quickly becoming a reality. This year, scientists reported using CRISPR-Cas9 and viable human embryos to fix mutations that cause heart and blood disorders. CRISPR acts as a pair of molecular scissors that is relatively easy and precisely manipulates DNA only 50% of the time. Remember those off-target mutations? And scientists have honed and developed the tool in the roughly 5 years it's been around, creating a myriad CRISPR mice, fish, dog, cows, plants, and other creatures. And its use in human embryos has been hotly debated. Should we or shouldn't we? Well, we've created a new genetic arms race against China, so we better. And I just read, actually, this morning, there was a new way that somebody just discovered to do CRISPR that got rid of a lot of those off targets. So maybe this will be a little bit safer. But remember when we interviewed Ira Pastor from BioQuark, he had said that he would not himself step up for genetic modification right now at the state that it is at. As science advances and people become more comfortable with gene editing, because the more it gets in the news is curing your cancer, law prohibiting tinkering with embryos will fall, she says, and it'll be up to prospective moms and dads to decide for themselves. Will editing a baby's genes be mandatory? The kind of thing that you're supposed to do. Well, for Julian Shivakalu, an ethicist at the University of Oxford, the answer is yes. Of course it is. This is the University of Oxford, where Oxitec came out of. Parents are morally obligated to take steps to keep their children healthy, he says. And that includes vaccinating them, ding, 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 and giving them medicine when they are ill. Genetic technologies are no different, he argues. And if these techniques can make children resistant to infections, cancer, or diabetes, then parents have an obligation to use them. Let's make sure that little Janie doesn't ever get cervical cancer. We're going to make this gene edit to her. Hey, this is crazy. Look at what happened with Gardasil and all the mistakes they made on that. So for now, He cautions that CRISPR's safety and efficacy have not yet been established, so parents shouldn't subject their children to the risk right now. But he also points out that this sort of editing will also require in vitro fertilization, but they are experimenting with in vivo, which is prohibitively costly for some people. And but someday, possibly soon, gene editing could become a viable medical intervention. If CRISPR were safe and not excessively costly, we would have a moral obligation to use it to prevent and to treat diseases. Using gene editing to cure genetic diseases is something retired bioethicist Ronald Green of Dartmouth College can get behind. I fully support the reproductive use of gene editing technology for the prevention and elimination of serious genetic diseases, he said at the symposium. If we could use gene editing to remove the sequence in an embryo that causes sickle cell or cystic fibrosis, I would say not only that we should do so, but in the case of such severe diseases, we have a moral obligation to do so. And that's interesting that they mention that, because I had a story queued up for a couple weeks here. We haven't touched on CRISPR in a while, and so I didn't read it, but I still had the tab open, believe it or not. Sickle cell patients are now seeing a hope in CRISPR. This is November 10th, 2017. Hertz Nazeri is a soft-spoken artist who likes to paint in bright colors with subjects like rainbow palm leaves and dancing women in twirling skirts. But one of the paintings he's created is darker. Here, the deep red discs contrast with misshapen blue-purple ones against a black background. One canvas shows a face drowning in the red and blue shapes and eyes streaming with tears, mouth agape in pain. That sounds pretty horrifying. His work reflects his lifelong struggle with sickle cell disease. Nazir, a 43-year-old Haitian-American, figures he has been hospitalized more than 300 times since he was a child, and he and other sickle cell patients will tell you that the worst part of the disease is the debilitating pain. It is a horrible thing to have because it is extremely painful. It is a major fight all the time, he says. Roughly 100,000 people in the U.S. have sickle cell, and that is a disease that afflicts mostly African Americans and Latinos, but also people from the Middle East, Asia, India, and Mediterranean descent. Compared with the average American, they live much shorter lives, only 40 to 60 years, and the cause of sickle cell has been known for a century. But the disease has long been underserved by the medical establishment and the pharmaceutical industry. That may be about to change, though. Don't worry about it. Step right up. Its genetic origin, a single well-studied mutation, makes an attractive target for treatments with the gene editing tool CRISPR. The idea is CRISPR could correct the genetic mutation responsible for sickle cell so that patients' bodies could make normal red blood cells, alleviating the pain and other severe symptoms associated with the disease. Researchers have already tested the gene editing tool on human sickle cell in the lab, and they are now working on getting the technique to clinical trials. Early results hint that sickle cell could be among the first diseases that CRISPR essentially cures. Look out. Once this happens, this is going to be all over the place. Despite lingering safety concerns about CRISPR in people, some sickle cell patients and their doctors are already embracing it. I would be one of the first people to volunteer, he says. And I want to take part in the study, says Nazarene. I first heard about CRISPR 2 years ago and then came across a YouTube video featuring Jennifer Doudna and Emmanuel Charpentier, two of the inventors of the technology. Yeah, but the two that did not win the patent. He's been enthusiastic about the idea of using CRISPR to treat his disease ever since. Sickle cell is one of the most common genetic disorders affecting millions of people around the world, caused by a mutation in a gene known as HBB, which makes hemoglobin, a protein that transports oxygen throughout the body. Blood cells with healthy hemoglobin are red and disc-shaped. Cells with abnormal hemoglobin are shaped like sickles used to cut wheat, and the characteristic that gives the disease its name. These misshapen cells are sticky and clumped together, and when too many of them build up, they create blockages in the blood vessels and they cut off oxygen to nearby parts of the body, causing severe episodes of pain. These diseases can also cause frequent infection, eye problems, and organ damage, and I would almost think stroke as well. CRISPR Therapeutics is one of a handful of gene editing startups to pursue new treatments for sickle cell. The company's approach involves isolating stem cells from the sample of a patient's blood. Scientists would use CRISPR to activate a genetic switch that would then raise the levels of fetal forms of hemoglobin in the blood, turning them to healthy. This fetal hemoglobin effectively counteracts the effects of a sickle mutation, and the modified cells would then be put back into the patient. Testing the method in lab experiments using stem cells taken from sickle cell patients, researchers at CRISPR Therapeutics found that 85% of the cells were successfully edited, which means that they were able to make healthy red blood cells. They said that when the stem cells are reintroduced into the patient, they should be able to ameliorate all of the symptoms of sickle cell. These stem cells are able to travel to the bone marrow, where they make more healthy blood cells for the rest of the body, and the healthy cells proliferate and eventually outnumber the sickle cell ones. St. Jude's Research Hospital, Adidas Medicine, and Intellia Therapeutics are all working on similar approaches. So now let's take a look at the biohacker. We have talked about him before. This is Josiah Zehner, the guy who founded Odin, which is the DIY gene hacking company that sends CRISPR out to anyone and everyone who wants to mess around with gene editing in mommy's back bedroom. Meet the biohacker who is rebuilding us all from his garage. Josiah Zehner is modifying his own genes and yours as he pushes the boundaries of science. One cannot help but draw comparisons between biohacker Josiah Zehner and cult cartoonist scientist Rick Sanchez of Ricky and Morty. And I don't know Ricky and Morty. And while Zehner currently sticks to a single reality and hasn't turned himself into a pickle yet, as far as we know, he has successfully implanted himself with jellyfish DNA. He once worked for NASA, and he is now bringing genetic design to the public. To truly understand why Zehner quit the stars such as NASA for a startup, we need to go back to the future. For many people, sports are an escape from a broken home or a rough childhood. And I was the same. That was until 1997, when my mother worked weekends for a few months in exchange for a computer. And the very first time I sat down and used it, I was hooked. The internet was just becoming big, and I explored and learned and taught myself computer programming. And at 19, I got a programming job at Motorola until the dot-com bubble burst. I wanted to know what to explore and how to explore the unknown and create worlds in real life like I did in programming. So I went to college to study biology, and I never looked back. That decision and a subsequent PhD in molecular biophysics at the University of Chicago led to every kid's dream. There was a prestigious fellowship at NASA where Zehner worked, and here we go, on engineering bacteria to terraform Mars. But dreams and reality don't always match up, and he soon got frustrated by the process. I think I downloaded an astronaut application when I was 16 or 17, so to say I wasn't excited to start working for NASA is an understatement, he says. However, when I arrived at NASA as a scientist, I learned that all the bureaucracy really hampers the development of new ideas or cutting-edge technology. It's because they have $400 toilet seats there. If I wanted to get something I was working on up on the space station to test it, it would take years, and I had so many ideas that I could have an impact now. I want to be able to explore and apply those, so I left in January 2016 to bring genetic design to people's homes. My mother was pretty sad, but things have been crazy ever since. There is no need for Zehner's mother to fear. He now is arguably one of the world's most well-known biohackers and is a lead figure in the DIY movement that is encouraging individuals and communities to study biology and life sciences, and that would be in your garage or your back bedroom, by using the same methods as research institutions. His company, called The Odin, sells scientific kits and instruments for people experimenting at home or in school, and their hugely successful Indiegogo campaign in 2015 brought CRISPR gene editing to the masses. The DIY bacterial gene editing CRISPR kit includes everything you need to make precision genome edits in bacteria at home. And like many scientists before him, Zehner is often his own guinea pig. And you know, here's something. I'm going to talk about this for a second while I'm looking. I found a story this morning where the FDA came out and they were warning people, do not do this at home. What a stupid idea. And if we catch you, we are going to throw every bit of the law we can at you for genetically engineering yourself. I posted it in my feed to be able to refer back when I got out here to get all my tabs together to do the show. And guess what? It's not there. And that's not the only story. Actually, there were two stories today that I posted, and it is not there. And I don't know what happened to it, but it was pretty damn good regardless. And if I can find it maybe for tomorrow, we will look at it. So anyway, his Odin kit now you can buy online and it'll ship all over, but he's been using himself as his own guinea pig. He started transfecting himself, and that is a new term. Look that one up. With green fluorescent protein from jellyfish back in 2016, the results were verified by a third party who found that the green fluorescent protein in his skin cells, and they said that it is proof that things can be done at home as well as in the lab. So be careful, because people are going to start splicing and dicing themselves. So now the University of Wisconsin professors come out, and this is November 28, 2017, and they are now contemplating the future of biosecurity. We've looked at this before. We found out that in a lot of these CRISPR labs, they are not treating these like level 4 security like you would for biowarfare facilities dealing with pathogens. Nowhere near. Gene editing, national security concerns discussed amongst international scientific community. In an international workshop in Hanover, Germany in October of 2017, scientists from around the world met with bioethicists and government experts to discuss gene editing and the national security implications it entails. If you remember, Clapper went up in front of the Senate Armed Services Committee last year and said that this was a weapon of mass destruction. The workshop was organized by the Inter-Academy Partnership, and there were three University of Wisconsin and Mortgage Institute research professors in attendance. And one of the main topics at the workshop was CRISPR-Cas9, a gene editing tool that draws a lot of attention from the world of science. It is more accurate and precise than previous techniques, but it has a wide range of potential applications. With all the hype that with the technology comes concerns, and the CRISPR getting into the wrong hands is a possibility, especially if people like Zehner are sending it out to whoever wants it, as well as that added gene sending it out to 60,000 people worldwide. All right, guys, have an awesome Thursday. We will continue